welcome back to the Sweet Spot, your go-to golf tipping show brought to you by the Racing Post. It is a bumper show this week. We'll be looking back on a memorable week for Team Europe in the Ryder Cup. It was a successful week once more for Steve Palmer. He has his selections on the Sanderson Farms and also the Alfred Dunhill. Three consecutive weeks of winning tips. Let's hope for more this week. If you were watching last week's episode, you will have seen that it was Bruce Billington's final here on the Sweet Spot. And in true Bruce Billington fashion, he spoke about everyone in glowing terms other than himself. As a fan of the Sweet Spot and now someone that stumbled into the presenting chair, I just wanted to say a big thank you from myself, I'm sure Steve, and also all of our viewers to Bruce. His work over the last few years with this Sweet Spot, conceptualizing it and nurturing it alongside Steve, has made for one of the best golf tipping shows on the internet. So Bruce, thank you very much. Let's get into the show. Steve, let's get into it. Ryder Cup, wow, what a week.
Magnificent performance from Europe. I thought Captain Donald hardly put a foot wrong. I know exactly why they're clamoring for him to retain the role. They want him for the 2025 Ryder Cup. Now, the players want him. The fans want him. It remains to be seen whether he wants the job again. But every player in his team contributed to that total of 16 and a half points. Yeah, we spoke last week about the holy trinity of Rory McIlroy, John Rahm and Victor Hovland. Yeah, they were absolutely magnificent. But you also had Tyrrell Hatton and Tommy Fleetwood. They really came to the party. Brilliant performances from those two. The rookies all chipped in with points, you know, little bits and bobs here and there. And I thought the two oldest members of the side, we must give a big mention to as well. You know, Justin Rose, you know, that putter was a magic one, wasn't it? You know, just guts and courage under pressure. I thought Justin Rose was fantastic. And I thought Shane Lowry, obviously, just, you know, a complete force of nature throughout the competition. It wasn't just the points he scored. It was the way he carried himself, the cheerleading role. I thought Shane Lowry was a massive integral part of that team. Yeah, it was just a team performance. And very, very impressed with Europe.
I must say, Stephen, watching last week's episode, and you were so keen on Europe. And I was just looking at that American side and thinking, you know, this is really strong. And at the time, I think US were actually favourites, and that flipped at the start of the tournament. What was it about that Europe side that you were so confident in? Because I think on paper, if you're just comparing the sides, the US were probably strongest.
It was nicely balanced, the European side. And as I said, I mentioned the two older statesmen there, Rose and Lowry, and then you had the young guns like Ludovic Aubert, Nicolai Hogar. I think there was a lovely balance to the side. You had some pairings formed, you know, Victor Hovland and Ludovic Aubert. I had people thinking I was barking up the wrong tree when I was going on about their languages are similar, like Norwegian. Yeah, yeah. Norwegian and Swedish, I can't remember the phrase that I used, you know, but there was a reason why they were speaking together in their mother tongue, you know, and it's just little things like that. You know, Hovland said how comfortable that made them feel together. And I thought those two would really connect well, and they did. I mean, that beating, you know, we must talk about that. And a 9-7 victory for Victor Hovland and Ludvig Aubert over Scottie Scheffler and Brooks Koepka. You know, you got the world number one. And, you know, a five-time major champion. You've got a lad who's only just come out of college with his mate Victor there, and they'd absolutely obliterated those two. I think that summed up what you got from that European team. You know, cocksure youngsters, you know, and inspired youngsters, an inspired team. You know, Seve Ballesteros. You know, have you ever seen as many pictures of Seve Ballesteros everywhere? Big murals of him, and he had his own locker. Did you know that?
Yes.
Seve Ballesteros' locker was next to Victor Hovland's. I mean, yeah, the team was just, yeah, the backroom staff did an amazing job. The players did an amazing job. Yeah, I could spend literally 5 or 6 hours talking about how impressed I was with this European side.
I mean, you know, we know all about Victor Hovland, and he's probably the informed golfer, you know, in the world at the moment. And he just goes from strength to strength. And there's such character about Hovland that we love. Yeah. I mean, Ludvig Aubert, you know, 6 months ago, you were chatting about this young Swede fresh out of college golf and, you know, about to rip up the PGA Tour. And so often we hear about these, you know, up and coming stars that never really amount to much. But I mean, this man has the world at his feet now.
Such a cool dude. You know, I just think he's got such a great temperament. I remember reading a quote from him during his college days when he was talking about how he likes to step away from the mayhem. He was saying how he finds it amusing how wrapped up people get in emotions. And when he was a college player, he saw, you know, people getting all sweaty and full of angst and that. And he said he just has this ability. He wasn't being cocky about it, but he just has this innate ability to just step back and find it all very amusing when people are getting, yeah, their knickers in a twist, so to speak. So, yeah, I think temperament-wise, Herbert proved it last week. Yeah, just he played on the Friday morning. Yeah, I was so impressed with Luke Donald just to throw him in with Victor in the Friday foursomes. Yeah, and Herbert handled it. So, yeah, Ludwig Eybar has got the world at his feet. And, yeah, Victor Hovland just smiling his way through everything. You know, winding up Brooks Koepka with his smile. Did you see, you know, Koepka, the sorest loser in the world, isn't he, Brooks Koepka? And he actually commented about how Victor had this cheesy grin on his face the whole day. You know, we're just adults or whatever. It was some pathetic comments from Koepka all week. Hovland's got a smile on his face because he's whooping your ass, my friend.
There is nothing more infuriating, is there, when you're a bit down in the dumps and things aren't going your way and the chap next to you is just smiling away and you know, giddy with life. Brilliant.
Yes,
I think the probably the one on paper going into the week, you would have said that the possible weak link would have been, you know, Bobby McIntyre. And after day one, where Justin Rose kind of carried it around, you were going, oh, this could be a long week for McIntyre, but the way in which he bounced back as well was mightily impressive.
Yeah, it's heartwarming, isn't it? I mean, you must have been watching all the videos afterwards on the team bus, and you got Bobby McIntyre singing Proclaimer songs with a beer in his hand. You know, the camaraderie is through the roof, isn't it? I'm surprised the roof's still on that team bus. I mean, they were singing some fantastic songs. Yeah, the unity was there for all to see. And, yeah, we don't know what the morale was like in the American camp, really. I mean, I think perhaps the Patrick Cantlay thing was overplayed a little bit. Because you often get with the Americans when they lose and they're put in that post-match media conference, then, you know, it can all kick right off, can't it? I mean, you remember Phil Mickelson, you know, sticking the daggers into to Tom Watson when Tom Watson was the captain. You know, if there are things that need to come out, they usually come out immediately in that post-match media conference. But they all said, all the players said, it's the tightest unit they've ever had, and they're all mates together. So maybe that was overplayed a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, if people aren't on Twitter or, you know, didn't hear what was going on, that it was a tweet that came out from a Sky journalist, wasn't it, that basically said that Cantlay's refusing to wear the Team USA cap because he's not being paid for it. And then we saw the reaction from the European crowds, and, you know, all got very tense. And then it boiled over at the end of the day with Rory and the caddies. So, I mean, what did you make of it? Or do you buy into the kind of unrest in the US camp, or do you think it was actually OK and they just didn't really play too well?
We've discussed on the Sweet Spot before how obsessed with money Patrick Cantlay is, apparently. You know, he plays the game for money by all accounts. And, you know, he has got a point there. He has got a point that they should be paid, really. I mean, I read about the revenue stream for the Ryder Cup, and it generates like £500 million or something. The Europeans, yeah, this is partly another reason why they're so inspired. They're not playing, obviously not playing for money. And that I think a lot of them, John Rahm even said in his pre-tournament media conference, he would pay to play, you know, because it's such a buzz. And I think, you know, Europe play for the sort of the history of the competition. There's so many icons. I mean, I mentioned there's so many, you know, Nick Faldo, Colin Montgomery, there's old, you know, old heroes of the Ryder Cup that you can look back on. Like, yeah, Colin Montgomery never won a major. He's going to be remembered as a hero for his Ryder Cup exploits, as well as all the order of merits and whatnot. But I just don't think the Americans have got anyone they can look back on like that. You know, who could you name as an American Ryder Cup legend? There aren't really many out there. I mean, Tiger Woods had a terrible record in it. Yeah, they haven't got anyone that they could do a big mural. No one they want to give a locker to, a post hummus locker to.
Did you see the quote that was the final thing that the European players saw on departing the changing room, Steve?
I didn't. What was it? This is Anfield. What was it?
It was a quote from Seve, And it said, if you ever feel sorry for someone on a golf course, it's time to go home. If you don't kill them, they'll kill you. And I thought, imagine seeing that. I mean, there's no, you've just got to be pumped after seeing that.
I'm surprised Shane Lowry didn't murder someone there. He was so pumped up, he was ready to kill, wasn't he? But, oh, blimey, no, I didn't know that. But, yeah, whatever they did, whatever the backroom staff did, they got it right, didn't they? Because the players were in such a good headspace, and you just didn't see that from the Americans. And I don't think illness in the camp can be blamed. I mean, there was, you know, it was panic stations when they dropped that. And I think it was only Ricky Fowler who was ill. And then, you know, why did you play him in the Friday foursomes? I don't want to start a witch hunt, but if you've got one player who's more ill than all the others, and then he shouldn't be playing the Friday foursomes. I mean, Ricky Fowler was the one player that didn't make any points in the whole competition. But no, it was poor from the Americans. They had a little rally on Sunday, didn't they?
It did get a touch nerve. And I think, you know, what I've already mentioned, McIntyre, you mentioned Fleetwood at the top of the show, I thought was mightily impressive again. There were a few moments on the Friday where you just thought, oh, you know, is his putting within 10 feet going to let him down? And actually, you know, came in clutch when it mattered. As you said, Tyrrell Hatton on that final day against the Open champion, mightily impressive. I mean, actually, like, go... We do have just crafted Ryder Cup players, don't you? Every mix we needed, we have. But, you know, if we go back a couple of years to the absolute thrashing in America and this whole kind of decade of dominance that was being spoken about, I mean, you could have quite easily bought into that. And it shows just how impressive this construction from Team Europe has been, because that feels an absolute world away now.
It does. It does. Yeah. We were wondering where the next generation was going to come from in 2 years ago. You know, where were our young players? And then up they pop, you know, brilliant, brilliant, brilliant young players. And Ludwig Eber, potentially the world number one quite soon. And yeah, America were underprepared, weren't they? I mean, I don't want to start witch hunts. Let's just glory in the European victory. But yeah, the American players that didn't play enough golf in the lead up, did they? And they were rusty in that opening session. They go 4-0 down straight away and they're right up against it. I mean, Scottie Scheffler didn't look like a world number one last week, did he, Jack? I mean, he hadn't played since the Tour Championship.
Barring singles, I thought he looked good.
Yeah, he played some golf in the singles, but yeah, the putting issue is still there. Yeah, it was annoying, wasn't it? The putting issue is still there. And the Patrick Cantlay, Xander Schauffele dream team. I mean, that's been sort of shot to pieces a little bit. They played twice together last week, lost both matches. Jordan Spieth just not ready for the Ryder Cup at all, was he? I mean, I don't even think he would have been ready for the Sanderson Farms Championship. He was just really out of touch and obviously concentrating on Sophie Spieth. And yeah, there was just nobody for Zach Johnson to rely upon apart from Max Homa, which was fantastic for us. I mean, yeah, it shows what you're dealing with. That Max Homa, Ryder Cup rookie, played five matches. Because Zach Johnson had nowhere to turn. Max Homa was playing well. Hardly anyone else was. Given five matches, and thank goodness he did.
Is the hat, Steve, this week from you a nod to Patrick Cantlay? Because of course the reason he said he wasn't wearing the hat was he was getting married, wasn't he, the day after the Ryder Cup, and he said he wanted to tan his forehead, which was one of the most impressive excuses I think I've ever heard.
I don't think he actually said that. Xander Schauffele's dad came up with that excuse for him.
Even better.
Xander Schauffele's dad is German, and he was on German radio, and he come up, he said, oh, no, he's got his wedding, and he doesn't want to ruin his face for the photos and stuff. So that may have been true, but they asked Cantlay about that, and he refused to admit it. I don't know what's going on there. I think they probably should get paid a little bit, but, the Europeans just do it for the shirt, don't they? We shall see. But, I mean, I think 2025 Bethpage, Bethpage Black, New York crowd. I remember some US Opens at Bethpage Black and they've been absolutely bonkers. You know, just a standard stroke player event. You know, no one's got really any strong allegiances in it. The crowd has gone wild. You know, I fear for the safety of the Europeans in at Bethpage Black. Let's enjoy this now because I can't for the life of me see us winning in 2025. I know Rory, when he'd had a couple of Peronis, is banging the desk thinking this is going to happen now, but I can't see it. And if you've got deep pockets, just take the 5-6 now. Probably the best time to back the estates. Yeah, they're 5-6 to win at Bethpage. If you can wrap tightly your funds.
We were saying this after the last Ryder Cup, weren't we? And your last dust.
Yeah, it's just been, look at the statistics. 8 of the last 9 now have gone to the home side. 8 of the last 9. Yeah, there's all sorts of talk about, you know, changing the rules. You know, perhaps we shouldn't let the home side set the courses up because it's too much of an advantage. I'm quite happy to let it ride, particularly as a punter who backs the home side every year, because you know, it's you know, you're just winning money all the time. But 8 of the last 9 have been won by the home side, and you can get 5-6 USA. I think they'll go off a lot shorter than that.
Okay, I'm going to throw you a curveball before we get into previewing this week's tournaments. No one would have predicted a couple of years ago Ludwig Ebert playing in this Ryder Cup. Who will be the next up-and-coming star for Europe that will feature in the next Ryder Cup?
Oh, blimey, that is a difficult question. I mean, yeah, you know, Ludwig Ebert is only 23. You know, Nikolai Hoggar, yeah, I don't know. I think those guys will just play again.
Might drop out by the next one.
Well, there's talk of Justin Rose being captain potentially if Donald doesn't fancy it. I mean, Donald might look at this as if, yeah, I am a hero now. Could I go from hero to zero if go over and we lose 28-0 at Bethpage Black? So he might not fancy it. And Justin Rose is getting to the stage now where if he doesn't qualify as a player, he could. There's not that many captaincy candidates for Europe now. Unless we can put politics to one side, and your Westwoods and your Poulters and your Garthiels can be brought back into the fold.
But Sergio was a Ryder Cup captain. I mean,
it's difficult, isn't it?
That would be the opposite.
Well, it's very difficult because, you know, his behaviour was so poor during the split with Liv. I mean, he was abusive in the locker room, wasn't he? I remember Bobby McIntyre, you know, tweeted about how disturbing it was when Garthiel was charging around the DP World Tour locker rooms telling everyone they were, you know, crazy for staying. So I don't think Athea, he's got some serious bridges to build to get back in there. And the same with the other guys. But and such is the happiness and unity of this European side, I don't think they'd be keen to bring any of the Liv guys back into the fold. So I think maybe Justin Rose, unless Luke Donald continues as the captain. And how about this? Tiger Woods for captain for Bethpage? I've been thinking about, yeah, how can you fire up that Bethpage crowd even more? Get Tiger Woods as the captain. I could see that happening.
I'm excited for the next one already, Steve. And the 2023 version has only just finished. Well, one final, I think one of my favourite pictures from the come down of it all was Bobby McIntyre boarding his budget aeroplane back to Edinburgh, yeah, with an iron brew in hand to try and cure, I suspect, a raging hangover. Just a brilliant weekend. Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
From the Ryder Cup, Steve, to the Sanderson Farms Championship. Shall we get one?
Well, we've got a good one in Scotland, haven't we? We're going to the home of golf. Yeah, let's get our peckers up. We're off to the home of golf. Do you want to do that one? I think we should do that one first. Yeah.
Let's do that one first. Let's talk about the Alfred Dunhill then, Steve. Usually we say which course is this played at. Which courses is this one played at? Take us through the Alfred Dunhill. What to expect?
Well, it's been going since 2001, and you're right, three courses are always in operation. St Andrews, Carnoustie, King's Barnes, all around 7,300 yards, all par 72s. They play a round at each course over the first 3 days. Then a cut is made after round three. The top 60 in ties tee up at St Andrews on Sunday for the denouement. St Andrews, very wide fairways, few drivable par fours, like we had last week at Marco Simone. Very easy in calm conditions, but far from easy in windy conditions. The Open's been played there many times, of course, most recently 2010, 2015, 2022. Carnoustie, the most difficult of the three tracks. It staged the Open most recently in 1999, 2007, 2018. King's Barnes never staged an Open, not on the road, so the shortest of the venues and the only one with four par fives. So you normally have to make a good score at King's Barnes to win this. We've had two rounds of 60 at King's Barnes. We've got 168 going to post, Jack. So, yeah, tough challenge for punters. And the weather forecast doesn't make it any easier because, you know, luck of the draw could play a significant role this week. Wind expected every day. Friday and Saturday are particularly windy. Got some light rain Thursday, Friday. Temperatures ranging from 12°C to 19°C.
I don't think I've ever used the phrase approach with caution and Steve Palmer in the same sentence, but it sounds like you are advising punters to tread carefully.
certainly pre-tee times. I mean, once the tee times come out, we can have a good look at things. And but pre-tee times, you have got to be careful, yeah, because I mean, on the Friday and the Saturday, a few players could get blown away if they're in the tee for the wind. If you're playing Carnoustie on one of those days, and St Andrews, you don't really want to be playing St Andrews on one of those days either. But yeah, that is one reason. You make a very good point there, Jack. It's the one reason why we're avoiding all the short prices. We got six selections and they're all big prices.
Okay, let me spin you through the top of the market for those at home. Tommy Fleetwood, of course, playing last week, is your favourite, 8-1. Matt Fitzpatrick, again, another Ryder Cup player, 10-1. Ryan Fox, 16s. Taylor Gooch, 18-1. Adrian Baronk, 20s. 25-1, Billy Horschel. Big of the rest. Steve, you already give it away. Six selections this week.
Yeah.
All big prices. Who's your first pick?
It's very unusual for me to have six, but yeah, all big prices. And yeah, we've got a lot of 168 runs. We've got to give ourselves a chance. Richie Ramsey, 80-1 is the number one selection. Who probably took great inspiration from watching the aforementioned Bobby McIntyre last week. I think all the Scotsmen were delighted to see McIntyre played so well. I mean, he was unbeaten through three matches. Yeah, got a little bit of help from Justin Rose on the first day, but yeah, McIntyre can be proud of the way he performed there, and you know, I think all of Scotland was proud of him. Ramsey loves Lynx golf. He was fourth. He won his fourth DP World Tour title on a Lynx track last year. Do you remember that one? The Kazoo Classic, one of your favourites. Mm-hmm. The Kazoo Classic at Hillside. And after winning that, he came off the course and just said how much he loves Lynx golf. He was second in the 2017 Irish Open at a Lynx track. And his record on this particular Lynx assignment is excellent. He was fourth in the 2009 Dunhill Lynx, second in 2014, 10th in 2019. His Lynx record stands up to close scrutiny. He's extremely accurate, so these strong winds, you know, are helpful for him. And I think he's in a great place mentally, as Richie Ramsey. When I went to Wentworth, I followed him because he made an amazing start at Wentworth. He was an early leader there. He just seems calm and content, Jack. Yeah, when I go to these golf tournaments, I sort of always got eyes everywhere, just trying to pick up little things. I saw Richard Mansell come out of the physio tent. I thought, oh, he's still got his injury issues. Blah, blah, blah. But I saw Richie Ramsey of his family by the practice putting green. He's just a picture of contentment, just a happy little family. You know, he had his wife and his young daughter there, and they're chatting. So I've picked up that Richie Ramsey is a happy chappy. And
what are the characteristics of a content man?
You can tell, Kai. If you look at a family situation, you can just tell he seems at peace and happy. And it's been translated to good golf, because happy people play good golf. Are you aware of that? Yeah, happy people play good golf. And Richie Ramsey's been rock solid this year. He was seventh in the Sudal Open, fifth in the Scandinavian Mixed, third in the Maiden Himmerland. And his last two starts, 28th at Wentworth in the end, and 20th in the French Open. So, yeah, I think we might get a Scottish winner on Sunday.
Well, I suspect he'll be even more content and happy with his life if he goes on to win this tournament, Steve. Richard Ramsey, your number one pick. Who's next?
Another Scotsman. And it may surprise Sweet Spot regulars because it's the man who broke my heart in the French Open the week before last. We're keeping the faith with Ewan Ferguson, who was on offer at 60-1. He was tied for the lead going to the final round of the French Open. We were on at 70-1 that week. And he putted into the water. I know you would have been tuning into that.
Yeah, I gasped when I saw it. Yeah.
You had every right to gasp. Yeah, he putted into water in the first hole. And then he went pin chasing on the second, understandably. It wasn't a bad shot on the second, was it? Found water on the second. So double bogey start. But I was impressed with how calm he remained in that situation. You know, I was the complete opposite. I was at home going sacre bleu, sacre bleu, testing out all my French expletives. But did you notice Ferguson? Just it was like nothing had happened. He must have been working on his temperament, because he stayed really calm, settled into his round, made some really good swings thereafter, finished 10th. So yeah, I was impressed by Ferguson's reaction to that. I think he can bounce back in his homeland this week. Yeah, that was Ferguson's fifth top 10 finish of the year. He was 12th in the Scottish Open, and he's young. He's 27, is Ferguson. Yeah, I mean, Richie Ramsey is 40. He may feel that the Ryder Cup ship has sailed for him. Yeah, it's not impossible, but he might feel like that. Ferguson, 27 years old, same age as McIntyre, They played a lot of golf together. He'll be fancying his chances of following in McIntyre's footsteps and qualify for the Ryder Cup. They both play well on links tracks. Ferguson won the Boys Amateur Championship at Royal Liverpool in 2013. He was 17th in the 2021 Dunhill Links, and he's good in the wind, really good in the wind. We've got wind all week. Do you remember when he won the Qatar Masters? 2022. Strong winds there, strong winds. He's comfortable in strong winds, very accurate. So I think Ramsey and Ferguson would be pleased with how bad the weather forecast is, because their accuracy stands them in good stead.
And do you think there's sort of a Scottish golfers mindfulness group then or something? Because you two players you've picked so far, yeah, both calm, collected.
Yeah.
Sort of just sit round and hum to each other or something.
Maybe it's the whiskey, but Ferguson used to be a bit more of a hothead, and he suddenly calmed down a lot. And and as I mentioned, happy golfers play well, calm golfers play well. Let's see what happens.
Well, apparently Scottish golfers play well as well. Are we going for another Scot here, Steve?
We jolly well are. I should have come dressed as Braveheart today, shouldn't I? It's Grant Forrest, another big price, 70-1. Grant Forrest, who is 3 years older than McIntyre, will definitely be inspired by McIntyre's Ryder Cup adventure. Forrest lives in East Lothian, a magnificent links golfer, won the 2012 Scottish Amateur at a links track. He was runner-up in the 2015 Amateur Championship at Carnoustie, so we know he can handle the toughest track he'll play this week. His maiden DP World Tour title came in the 2021 Hero Open at Fairmont St Andrews, down the road from where we are this week. Maybe he can win at the slightly more famous St Andrews venue this week. He was third in the Kazoo Classic that Ramsey won at Hillside last summer. He was 10th in the Dunhill Links last year. He was 11th in the Scottish Open, where we were on him at the Renaissance Club in July. Just been banking healthy checks this year. 10th in Abu Dhabi, 6th in Singapore, 4th in the ISPS Handa, 8th in the KLM, 3rd in the Irish Open a month ago. Run, Forrest, run.
I mean, imagine just banking healthy checks. That's what every person wants to do, isn't it? I mean, you have been recently. I must say, I forgot to tee you up, Steve. But, you know, if one of these Scots goes on to win this week, or, of course, we've got the Sunderland Farms, you will be going for four in a row. We had Fagala in the Fortinet. We had Big Bryson in Live Chicago. Europe and Max Homer, as well as a host of other, winning selections last week. So, I mean, you're obviously a happy and content man at the moment as well.
Well, I had a holiday and then I came back from the holiday refreshed. I think holidays do me the world of good. Yeah, I do feel sharp at the moment. We're going to get a big prize winner in the Dunhill. And we've got three more to go.
Best we speed up, otherwise poor producer Will will be on overtime. Who's the next?
Well, we've had three Scotsmen and now we're going to have three Englishmen. Five of the last nine Dunhills have been won by an Englishman, and I fancy Eddie Pepperell may well keep that bolster that statistic. Eddie Pepperell watched the Ryder Cup at home last week. You can tell he loved every minute of it. He's only 32, and behind all that self-deprecation, he likes to be sort of taking the mick out of his own game. Lots of Twitter bants. He knows it's entirely feasible he can qualify for the Ryder Cup in his career one day. And his form lately is encouraging. He was third in the ISPS Handa at the end of August. He was eighth at Cranfirthiar. And in his last two starts, he's missed the cut by just a shot. Irish Open, BMW PGA. He played great on the Friday at Wentworth. He shot a 68. Such a shame he fell a shot shy there. I think he was going to charge up the leaderboard at the weekend. He's got his game in order now. And his links record, it's absolutely amazing when you go through it. He was a playoff loser in the 2015 Irish Open at Royal County Down. He was second in the 2018 Scottish Open at Geleen. He was sixth in the 2018 Open at Carnoustie. We'll be back there again this week. He was second in the 2022 Hero Open at Fairmont St Andrews. I could literally go on and on. And in this particular event, he was seventh in 2017, 15th in 2019, 17th in 2021. So, I hope Eddie's got his game face on this week. We know he likes a laugh and a joke, but he can definitely win this week, which would be jolly nice.
Absolutely. It's a strange one with Pepperell, isn't it? Because, obviously a very talented golfer, but I think most people in the kind of golfing community know him as a bit of a Twitter personality instead. I mean, it shows that form of recent years, and he hasn't been up to scratch, because he's be more involved in kind of conspiracy theories more than holing 6 foot putts.
I agree. But I mean, he's finished third at Sawgrass in the Players' Championship. He's good enough to qualify for a Ryder Cup team.
Okay. Who's up next?
Alex Fitzpatrick, 66-1, who was at the Ryder Cup last week cheering on his brother. You had Rasmus Hoggar supporting Nikolai, his brother, and you had Alex watching Matt. Yeah, literally a band of brothers last week were Team Europe. And Alex is back to the day job this week. You know, he obviously got his tail up from being involved last week. He's only 24. You know, he's got Ryder Cup dreams. It's entirely feasible we can play with his brother in the Ryder Cup. The Fitzpatricks are from the north of England. You know, links golf, second nature. And Alex showed his liking for links golf when qualifying for the Open at West Lancashire Golf Club in the summer. He played fantastic in the Open. It was his Open debut at Royal Liverpool. Remember watching him? You would have seen. Yeah, you were up there, weren't you? Yeah. What a debut. Finished 17th. He beat his brother by 4 shots. Then he won on the Challenge Tour at the start of August. Then he finished 2nd on the DP World Tour in the ISPS Hander. Then he was 5th at Cranfirth TR. Yeah, the cat is well and truly out the bag on how good Alex Fitzpatrick is. There's two Fitzpatricks in town now. I think he could end up being as good as his brother. And we have to back him for, you know, what is a very suitable assignment this week. He was 28th on his Dunhill Links debut last year when he was ranked outside the world's top 1,000. Now he's up to 136.
Sorry to take a slight tangent here, Steve, as we always do. I love hearing that you mentioned there that the brothers in attendance at the Ryder Cup, the Højgaard brother, was apparently helping, giving people lifts on the buggies.
Yeah.
Thing, like, what humbling from, you know, on tour one week to being a kind of a glorified taxi driver the next. It's brilliant. Well,
that was his only way of getting there, I think. it was Thomas Bjorn, one of the European vice captains, said, "I need a buggy driver." And he asked Rasmus to be his buggy driver. So, yeah, he was officially Thomas Bjorn's driver for the week. That got him the gig. But
I would rather that than I did see a video of Zach Johnson basically kind of waitering and was asking the caddies at one section, you know, chicken or beef. For the baguettes, and I thought you're the Ryder Cup captain. You shouldn't be taking kind of sandwich orders.
No, you got to delegate that, haven't you?
Yeah,
he was driving his own buggy as well. I saw him driving his own buggy. You could tell he was getting excited on Sunday because he was really picking up speed on the buggy. You know, we're actually gonna do it. But then he had a bit of a crash.
Well, that's where they went wrong. They didn't delegate jobs. We cracked the code there.
He did it. Yeah, he did a few things wrong. But yeah, as I say, I think he's a nice man, so we don't start a witch hunt.
Okay, I've forgotten how many
we've got one to go. Five, I'm sorry, four? I don't normally have this many, but I think this is a tournament to have 6 big prizes in it. The last one is Matthew Jordan at 125-1. I must have my annual investment in Matty Jordan to win the Dunhill Links Championship. This is a Links master made for this event, especially when the wind's up like it will be this week. He's grown up playing links golf. He's a Royal Liverpool member. His career highlight came in the summer at Royal Liverpool. He qualified for the Open at West Lancashire. Then in the event itself, he finished 10th. An amazing Open debut, which just showed how adept he is on this sort of terrain. He won the St. Andrews Links Trophy in 2017. He won the Lytham Trophy in 2018 by 9 shots. He was 5th in the Dunhill Links Championship in 2019. This lad is one of the best links golfers on the DP World Tour. He's won on the Challenge Tour. I think a DP World Tour breakthrough is coming at some stage. And he played well in round 2 of the French Open last time out. Missed the cut on the mark.
Whenever you mention Matthew Jordan at big prices, I start to bubble with excitement. Because I don't think I've ever had a return on my investment with Matthew Jordan. But he always teases you. You know, he should never be 150-1. And then you kind of, you 9 holes in, you go, actually, maybe he should have been. But
if you backed him for the Open, getting 10 places or more, you would have
back him with 8 places.
Oh, there you go.
That's a me problem. That's not a Matthew Jordan problem.
Exactly.
There we go. That is the Alfred Dunhill, I think, Steve. That was a mammoth.
Yeah, time for Sanderson Farms action.
Let's get on to the Sanderson Farms and your favourite, I can't believe this, your favourite, Ludwig Ebert. At 12-1, Jaeger 20-1, Eric Cole 20-1, Emiliano Grillo 25s, Keith Mitchell 28, bigger the rest. Steve, not the most deep field, I shall say, but the Sanderson Farms, where is it being played? What shall we expect?
I should be in good form for this one because I was drinking with some farmers on Sunday night, actually. I went to celebrate the European victory at the local pub. There was a big gang of farmers in there who were celebrating the last harvest of the year or something. Well,
Are your local farmers happy? Or I mean, my local pub is very much a farmer's pub, and they're always moaning about something.
Well, they seem deliriously happy about it being the last harvest of the year. I guess now the nights are drawing. I don't know why they can't do any more harvesting, but that's by the by. The Country Club of Jackson, Mississippi, 7,461 yards, par 72, four par fives, hosted this event since 2014. Tree-lined traditional parkland tracks, slick greens, tight lies around them. Winning score has been between 16 under par and 22 under par in every edition. Seven of the last nine Country Club of Jackson champions finished the week inside the top 10 for greens in regulation. So, grr is your stat to look at this week.
Okay, Steve, I'm excited where you're going for your top tip here. Are we at the top of the market or venturing at bigger prices?
Yeah, I've got one market leader, then a few juicy ones. It's not Lou Vigeba. We'll get to him later.
I thought you were going for him.
No, I can't. I think he's a short price given the exhaustion of Ryder Cup week and, you know, a long journey to boot. You know, Rome to Jackson's not straightforward. We didn't mention the market leaders in the Dunhill, did we? You know, Tommy Fleetwood, Matt Fitzpatrick, and Bobby McIntyre all playing. There's surely got to be some sort of exhaustion that I certainly don't like the top two at short prices there. But we're not back in Ludwig. We're back in Stefan Jäger. Stefan Jäger, 22-1. So I think a Scotsman is going to win the Dunhill Links, and I think a German is going to win the Sanderson Farm. So the European dominance will continue. Nobody mentioned Jäger for the Ryder Cup, you know, but his form on the PGA Tour has become so consistent. You know,
Steve, throughout the duration of this show, you've put up about 32 possible options. Right? I mean, if you were the captain, we'd have no chance.
Yeah, you're right. I didn't mention Stefan Jäger for the Ryder Cup, but I just think he deserved a small mention because he's become a really consistent PGA Tour performer. He's world number 92 now. He's a 34-year-old. He's a six-time Korn Ferry Tour champion. He's hunting that maiden PGA Tour title. And the Sanderson Farms, what an opportunity. He went to college at the University of Tennessee. He's lived in Tennessee ever since. Tennessee borders Mississippi. We're in Mississippi this week. This is his neck of the woods. One of the Korn Ferry Tour wins came in Tennessee. He's been playing in the Sanderson Farms since 2016. Knows the Country Club of Jackson like the back of his hand. He was 14th in the 2018 edition. Top 30s the last 2 years, never teed up there with more confidence. In his last 33 starts, he's missed only three cuts. Shows you how consistent he's become. He's made the cut in his last 14 events. He's 13th on the PGA Tour for greens in regulation, which is the key stat this week. So if we can get a few putts from Stefan this week, then we're in business.
Stefan Jäger, Steve Palmer's main selection for the Sanderson Farms, around about 22-1. Nice price. Let's see who's next on your list.
Davis Riley, 50-1. I wish Bruce was here for this one because he would have a face like thunder. He thinks I'm too loyal to Davis Riley, but I think that loyalty will pay off in the fullness of time. Riley's playing in his fifth major this week. You know, he's a Mississippi man. He said how important this tournament is to him. He was born in Mississippi. He still lives in Mississippi. He went to college in neighboring Alabama. And when he did lift a PGA Tour trophy in April in the Zurich Classic Pairs event with Nick Hardy as his partner, that win came in Louisiana, which is another state which borders Mississippi. So Riley plays well close to home. He'll be comfortable this week. And I think that close season break will have done him good. You know, we all know Riley's pure class, one of the best swings in the game, in my opinion. But the grind of tour life last year was bringing him down. You know, his FedEx Cup playoffs ended at the St. Jude Championship in the middle of August. He's had a nice break. I think he'll come back strong. He posted three top fives on the PGA Tour last year. Lost a playoff to Sam Burns for the Valspar Championship. I think this season he's going to fill up his mantelpiece. He's only 26. I think he'll be on the 2025 Ryder Cup side. There you go. There's an early prediction.
There's another one. I've a pattern with your selections this week. You're approaching and you want players with a zen and with clarity. And I like that. I think you're right. I think mentality is huge in golf, isn't it?
It is. They can all hit the ball. It's what goes on in here, isn't it?
Absolutely. Okay, who's up next?
Davis, another Davis. Davis Thompson, 50-1. Another youngster extremely comfortable in this neck of the woods. Davis Thompson was born across the border in Alabama. He went on to become world number one amateur, turned professional in 2021, won on the Korn Ferry Tour last summer, then almost made a PGA Tour breakthrough this year. He lost a tight duel with John Rahm for the American Express. I think PGA Tour success is certain for Thomas at some stage. And the Sanderson Farms, great opportunity. He's got 3 months of solid form behind him. He's made the cut on both his previous Sanderson starts. And 51's very juicy.
Okay. How many were there for this tournament?
Five. Two to go. Two to go, jockeys!
Okay. let's get your fourth.
Sam to his friends, Stevens, 55 to one. Another PGA Tour maiden who I feel almost certain will make a breakthrough at some stage. Yeah, my top four tips in this event are all maidens, but six of the last nine Sanderson Farms have been won by a maiden. Stevens got promoted from the Korn Ferry Tour, quickly started appearing on PGA Tour leaderboards. He was 13th in the Farms Insurance Open at the start of this year, 15th in Puerto Rico, third in the Corrales Punta Cana, second in the Texas Open, made the cut in the USPGA, 43rd in the US Open, 10th in the 3M Open, you know, established now on the PGA Tour. He was 67th on his Sanderson Farms debut last year. 12 months later, serious title threat.
I love Sam Stevens, and I'm sure he's a superb golfer. Whenever I hear or see his name, Steve, I just think that is a name for like a League Two midfielder. You know, Sam Stevens, you could see playing in, you know, in the middle of the park for Notts County or something. I mean, like, there's just a name you think that is suited for that.
I think that's a fair comment. I think you should go for Samuel. Samuel seems a little bit more gravitas.
Okay, the 11th selection of this week's episode, Steve. Well, congratulations for getting through all of this. Who is the final one?
You can tell I got plenty of state money at the moment. It's Scott Stallings at 125 to 1, who lives in Tennessee. Went to college in Tennessee, bit of a hero in Knoxville, actually. He does a lot of good work for charity, in Knoxville. And he always hops over the border to Mississippi, fancying his chances in the Sanderson Farms. When this event was called the True South Classic in 2012, you're born then? When this event was called the True South Classic, Stallings won that. It was played in Mississippi, but a different course. But then since the switch to Country Club at Jackson, he's finished sixth in the 2020 Sanderson Farms, and he was 13th last year. So Stallings hasn't been in great nick, but yeah, he's had a little break. I think it's worth chancing that he comes back to form at, you know, a happy hunting ground, familiar terrain.
Lots of big prizes this week, Steve. How would you advise viewers to play all of these?
Each way bets on each way singles on all of them. Each way. So yeah, because they're most of them are nice juicy prices. There's only Stefan who's a little bit shorter in it. I think it's certainly a viable staking plan.
Okay, brilliant. Just run us through all 11 selections once more so we can jot them down furiously on paper.
Dunhill Links Championship, Richie Ramsey, Ewan Ferguson, Grant Forrest, Eddie Pepperell, Alex Fitzpatrick, Matthew Jordan.
Okay, and on the Sanderson Farms,
Stefan Jaeger, Davis Riley, Davis Thompson, Samuel Stevens, Scott Stallings.
Brilliant. There we go. There's all 11 selections for this week's tournaments across the two. Is this week a bit of a come down for you, Steve, or are you still kind of flying high on life?
I'm struggling with exhaustion, I have to be honest. Ryder Cup week's taken it out of me, and I think it's taken it out of Tommy Fleetwood. I think it's taken it out of Matt Fitzpatrick, and I think it's taken it out of Ludwig Eber. I think back in a Ryder Cup of this week is a bit of a gamble because you don't know what condition they're going to be in. Maybe I shouldn't tar them with the same brush as me. Maybe I just haven't got as much stamina as them.
Well, like, they'll have comprehensive kind of rest and recovery plans. Do you?
No, I certainly don't. I certainly don't. And I need to get my, I'm getting weighed down by my hair. I need to get a haircut. That's why I got this silly hat on. My son got given this at Wentworth for getting a hole in one on the crazy golf. I'm only wearing it because my hair is just out of control. So, yeah, my priorities are getting rest and a haircut.
Well, I did wonder, because bucket hats are very in fashion now, aren't they? The youth of today often see those appear at kind of Reading Festival and the like. I didn't know if you were trying to get down with the kids a little bit.
No. And Bobby McIntyre likes to wear one occasionally. So maybe can be seen as a tribute to Bobby McIntyre rather than just because my hair is not fit for purpose.
Great stuff there, Steve. Pleasure as always. Brilliant stuff. It was a great week last week for TV Europe, and hopefully another good week for Steve Palmer. You can follow all of his in-play action on the Racing Post Sport website as well, so don't miss out on that. There are a few winners last week, but plenty of you wrong, which I'm very glad about. Steve's put up a lot of selections this week. Please only ever gamble with money that you can afford to lose. We will be back next week for another episode of The Sweet Spot.